Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast. I'm meteorologist Kirsty Zontini.
And I'm meteorologist McCall Vrydags. This is a podcast all about weather. We are two broadcast meteorologists in Dayton, Ohio.
And we just can't stop talking about weather. So when we're not on TV, we figured why not jump behind the mic to answer your weather questions and talk about all things meteorology.
Now remember, you can listen to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast anytime you want on Apple iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and WHIO.com.
Hey, McCall.
Hey, Kirsty.
How are you?
I'm good.
Getting sick of this snow, aren't we?
Yeah, I know. Winter is holding strong. But that's what happens this time of year. I feel like we do a lot of flip-flopping.
We do. And that can lead to some pretty bad weather, some powerful weather, and some pretty severe weather, which unfortunately was something that occurred south of us.
Yeah, there was an extreme tornado outbreak that was down towards the Gulf States. And interestingly enough, before this event happened a week prior, one of the questions that I answered on TV, because we do Weatherwise Wednesdays, and the question was, how will severe weather season be in the Miami Valley? And I pointed out the fact that we're in an El Nino pattern. What that does is it brings the jet stream down close to the Gulf States, and that's likely where the most intense severe weather is going to be this year.
Yeah.
And fast forward 5 days after I did that on air is when this outbreak happened.
Yeah. And it was almost two dozen deaths, which
horrible,
you know, outnumbering anything we had last year. It just the fact that many people lost their lives in a tornado outbreak and in a well forecasted and well warned, as many would argue.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, they're trying to move forward. They're trying to rebuild and get their lives back together. But it seems, at least just looking through social media, the, you know, meteorologists across the country and some social scientists as well, just kind of looking at some of the infrastructure things that maybe need to continue to be worked on. It really, I think, started a dialogue again of some of these areas that were hit, what types of homes, that kind of thing, what can be done.
Yeah, I think it was a highly populated manufactured home, mobile home type of area. Granted, you know, if you had a stronger home, you know, you might have been in a better situation, but these were powerful twisters that
came
through.
Right, they weren't, this wasn't anything weak. This was insane. So kind of a really horrible way to start a transition into spring, but one that, if anything, maybe now everyone is just a reminder of don't ignore warnings.
Yeah, don't ignore and take it as a learning experience that I know our brains are still in the winter mind frame, but like we have to start thinking severe weather. And how do we prepare for severe weather season?
Yeah.
And our guests that we have on are going to talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. Plus, they've been the boots on the ground after some of these devastating events. I've been to a couple of tornado damage sites in the Miami Valley, but nothing compares to what just happened in the Gulf States, and nothing compares to hurricane or wildfire events. And we're going to hear real life experiences with our guests today.
Exactly. So I want to introduce our guests today. We're going to start with Mike Carter. Give us a little background on yourself, sir.
Hello, Kirsty. Yes, I'm a communication specialist with Ohio Task Force One. That's one of FEMA's 28 urban search and rescue teams located around the country. We work out of Kettering, actually. And we have about 120 people rostered. At any particular time in a Type 1 deployment, we'll send out 80 or 84 people, depending upon the type of skills that are usually required.
Okay. So part of your job then, I guess, what occurs that you're like, okay, here's my people, then you decide who you're going to disperse out?
Typically, we are on a rotation, so it sort of is like the last guy that didn't get out goes out.
Okay.
But typically what happens with us is kind of reflecting on some of the comments that you made in your introductory comments. Typically, when they call out a federal task force, they ain't nothing left.
Okay.
So we have to take our own communications infrastructure with us. We take our own radios, our own satellite gear, our own equipment for doing data transmissions back to headquarters down in D.C. So when we show up, there typically is no power, no cell phone, no radio, no nothing. So we have to drag all of that stuff with us in an attempt to save souls.
Right. I mean, because like you said, communication is so important, so powerful, and can help keep organization to an area that is completely disorganized at that point.
That's exactly the case, because when you're when you have no telephone, how do you call for help? So that's where the urban search and rescue group comes in. That's largely what we do. We have our own medical people that go with us, along with mechanical structural engineers. We take our own cribbing and shoring, rescue guys that are absolutely amazing. They can go through 2 feet of reinforced concrete faster than a mole can go through dry sand in your garden. It's amazing. And our goal is we have microphones that we listen for tapping underneath rubble piles. We have infrared cameras that we spook around and try and find survivors. And we have to be ready to roll in about, I think we have a 6-hour window from the time we're notified. We have to be on the road because there may well be people trapped.
Right. And,
they're not going to survive very long. Oh, so gosh. That's when we go into theater, things have gotten pretty ugly.
Wow. When is the most recent time, I guess, that you have been?
My most recent deployment was during Hurricane Harvey.
Okay.
Which was, it was very interesting. We got down to Texas and were basically landlocked for about 48 hours because we couldn't move.
Yeah.
We were trapped where we were. Even though we had our boat squadron with us, it was very, very difficult because the water, well, where we were stationed, they had a team in from California, mm-hmm. and they were running their airboats up and down the parking lot of the school where we were stationed. Mm-hmm. It was really quite a mess.
Yeah.
And it's tough to see all of the homeless folk whose lives will probably never be the same.
Right.
They had nice, comfortable middle class living, mm-hmm. and now they are. I know when I was at Sandy, you would see people walking around with green trash bags.
Yeah.
That's what they had, and they actually got the trash bag from some kind soul that was helping out the people that had been hurt there, and that's all they had.
What is that like? I mean,
it's tough. It's hard.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being in your position and having to see people that are just like you, and then imagining how that would impact your life.
Well, I always think when I'm on a deployment that you get pretty beat up, you get pretty tired, it's rough, because we're typically deployed for a 14-day period, mm-hmm. plus 1 day travel.
Darren, yeah.
And I always think that when this deployment is over, I'm going to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of folks that have no home to go home to.
Yeah. I mean, you're witnessing people that have lost everything, but yet you still have to keep yourself together.
You've got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for what you do.
Yeah.
And
you're making a difference in their lives. You know what I mean? It may be hard to see and do, but you are helping them.
That's our goal, is to get there and save lives.
Yeah. Oh, man. And that's what you're doing. So once again, probably not necessarily the first thing that people think about or even know that crews like your crew is are out there, are, you know, like you said, saving lives, rescuing people, and keeping that line of communication open. That's a huge deal and so unbelievably necessary. We're so used to having a phone that can always ring and text and
it never goes down. It never goes away until it does.
Yes, exactly.
And when it does, you're in a different world.
Yeah.
Well, it's like darkness.
And I mean, you're a special type of person that in this sense that disaster happens somewhere in a moment's notice, within 6 hours, you're dropping your life, whatever you're doing, whatever everybody thinks is important in that day is no longer important because you're going to change your path at that point.
We got the call up for Harvey about, I guess I got the call up about 10 p.m. And I think I was awake for 4 days, I think. And needless to say, your capacity to do a whole lot goes down quite a lot then. But somebody's got to do it.
Yeah. We spoke with one of our sister station meteorologists, and he was in Hurricane Florence. And we were talking about, you know, is there a moment that you're scared when you're there? And he said, this one, yeah, perhaps a little bit, but it wasn't the kind of fear as Harvey. He said, you know, with the water just kept coming up and coming up and seeing all of the lives that were impacted in Harvey. And he said it was a different level.
Yeah, so. I suppose you and I are, what, Kirsty, 3 feet away, something like that.
Yeah.
And where we were stationed for a good period of time, it was raining so hard that no matter how loudly you and I yelled at each other, we could not hear each other because of the rain on the roof.
Oh my goodness.
It was pretty grisly.
Thank you for sharing that and for all that you have done for Harvey and for all the other missions that you're a part of. Another person also that is heavily involved is Mr. Gary Clark. Welcome.
Hi, Kirsty.
Hi.
I'm McCall.
Hi.
So Gary also connected in this and also someone that has been on several missions.
Yes.
Let's go a little bit deeper now into what exactly you're doing on those missions.
Okay. Well, first, I am a volunteer at the Dayton Area Chapter of the American Red Cross. Mm-hmm. I have a steady state role, in which is locally here. I'm part of the disaster action team, which, you know, the local fire calls that happen that we get dispatched to. I'm also a disaster preparedness educator for youth, grades 3 through 5 with the Pillowcase Project, which is a project sponsored by Disney, which came out after Hurricane Katrina. Okay. Mm. So then I also have a disaster role. When the bigger disasters happens, I am deployed in areas such as disaster assessment, which is the damage assessment of the area, transportation, the providing goods and supplies and people, getting them to where they need to go, and disaster service technology, which is stuff like networking and computer operations and communications.
Yeah.
So there's I have a wide range of roles that I do at any given time. So last year, 2018, I was deployed to Cincinnati for the Ohio River floods.
Okay.
And my role down there was disaster assessment. So we were going door to door, assessing each house, taking damage surveys.
Wow.
That way they can get relayed back to the Red Cross. So, you know, we would partner with our emergency management agencies down there. And that translates into the type of disaster assistance an area needs.
Mm-hmm.
So like we provide distribution of emergency supplies, such as cleanup kits, bleach, mops, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or if it's a major that we may need to open shelters and that we have to house these clients somewhere. I went to the California wildfires for the Mendocino Complex fire.
Yeah, forget about how impactful those were.
That one was, I was a transportation role there, and that was a lot of driving.
Yeah.
I was driving 4 hours round trips to the airport, getting supplies, getting people, taking them to disaster zone, or if there was a medical need at one of the shelters to procure that item and take it to the shelter for the nurse that needed it.
What is that like being in an area you're probably not super familiar with and having to drive and transport and, you know, be responsible for, that's pretty important.
Yes. it's and not knowing the area, I mean, you're kind of relying on GPS. And then it gets into routine.
Yeah.
But what happens if GPS isn't working? You just kind of fuddle your way and using the old-fashioned maps. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Old
yeah.
technology still works.
Right. Maps still work, guys.
So you go and buy a gazetteer at the local bookstore and you just work. You adapt.
You do what you got to do.
And then so after that one, I was deployed into Hurricane Florence. Again, doing disaster assessment. This time I took more of a supervisory role,
mm-hmm.
and I was more of a situational awareness. I was deploying teams into the areas that were impacted, also keeping track of the river floods that were still going on after the hurricane had hit, because the rivers were still rising. So a lot of road closures, where to direct the teams to go. Yeah. And, you know, 2 days after arriving there, we had a tornado warning hit two counties away.
Mm. Wow.
And so we had to go and do disaster assessments on that area, as well as doing the hurricane stuff and keeping the team safe that are out there, letting them know there's a tornado warning in our coverage area that we are currently in.
What was, I guess, communication? Were you guys using radio? Were you able to still have cell phones? Was it, you know?
Up until Hurricane Michael, which was my fourth deployment this year. When I went to Hurricane Michael in Florida, Panama City, of course, 65% of the cell towers were out.
Right, I remember that.
And we did use the emergency communication response vehicle from Columbus. Went down there. Me and another teammate drove that vehicle from Columbus down to Florida, and we did utilize the amateur radio to talk to the EMA, the state EMA, the local fire, because there was that much of a need that the infrastructure was gone, and we had to use those communication skills in order to provide the services to the clients. I mean, we had a few emergency situations where they had to call the medical helicopter in at one of the shelters.
Wow.
And the only way they could do that was through the amateur radio, calling the state EMA, telling them that we have a medical emergency down here, because there was no way to contact the local FEMA group or the EMA locally to get that emergency in there.
Wow.
So luckily we had the assets and the capability to contact the state EMA, who got the ball rolling.
Wow. I see. And the radio, I mean,
I know.
People just, they're not growing up with it as much, and they just forget, but like, it's always working.
Yes, no,
and that's the thing.
It never stops
working. And what people don't realize is that, you know, a lot of the technology came out of the radio, you know, our cell phones.
Right.
You know, GPS, email, you know, a lot of that texting was all, you know, started out in amateur radio.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if the phone lines go down, we can still talk on radio simplex, which is, you know, use without the repeater, just talking radio to radio. Mm-hmm. And if we can have a base station that has more power, we can get out to where we need to.
I think I remember on Twitter actually seeing the photo of that communication truck.
Yes.
That it was like its own little world.
Yeah, I just remember seeing a lot of things on social media of like everything else wasn't working, and the only way people were getting information was from radio. And it does bring to that point the importance of it.
And one of the things, you know, at the shelter, when you're trying to locate everybody or trying to get help or trying to, our communications truck was set up with a Viasat satellite to bring that communication into our truck, and then we provided Wi-Fi to everybody in the shelter, the workers and the residents. That way they can contact their family members to let them know they're safe, to contact social services that they need help with this, registering for FEMA help or whatever was needed.
I can tell that you have a similar mentality, I think, as to Kirstie and I, in the sense that when there's bad things happening as far as weather, you kind of take off that personal hat and you go into this mind frame that you just need to get the information out there and you need to be helpful.
Oh, yes.
But there is a point of reflection. You know, for me, I feel like it's always, you know, after and the dust has settled. You went to so many things this year, and I know you had different roles. Some you were probably deeper seated into what was happening. Others is more of a support role. But is there anything that just sticks out in your mind from this past year that is just something you're never going to forget?
Oh, that's a hard one.
I mean, for example, we spoke with Brian Wood. He is a storm damage analyst, and he was saying that when he went to the Panama City area, he said it was interesting that you could stand on the beach and look out at the water, and it just looked like paradise, but you turn 180 degrees, and you could just see mass destruction.
Yes, and, you know, I went to Mexico City Beach.
Yeah.
I was there where all that destruction happened. I went through Tyner Air Force Base and driving through there. And just remarkably, you could see exactly the hurricane path, because one side of the bridge would be completely devastated and the other side recover fairly quickly by the time we got in there. Yeah. I was sent to Port St. Joe first, which is another area. They got hit by Hurricane Michael. And so it was a week before I got into Panama City before we started providing services in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, just from one side of town to the other side of town was just a remarkable difference just because of the tornado path. I mean, the hurricane path.
Right. When you were in California, were you close to the, like, where the fires were? Like, could you smell the fires?
Oh, every morning. We were placed in hotels.
Mm-hmm.
So every morning we woke up and I was right there on the lake. I happened to have a beautiful spot on the lake. Every morning you woke up, you could smell the smoke and you could just see the haze over top of the lake. And from the mountains, you knew how close you were to the fire.
Mm. That's crazy. Did you have like really interesting sunsets because of the haze in the sky?
Didn't really see a lot of sun.
Oh, because the smoke.
It was that thick. Yeah.
Wow.
You knew it was daylight, but you could not see the sun because of how thick the haze was.
I think actually this morning we had talked that there were also two volunteers that were going down to Alabama, actually, from the Red Cross. And they had said, you know, daily you think of the Red Cross, a lot of fire relief. You know, you're going to, if there was a house fire, helping to make sure that people have what they need and you know.
And if there was an operation available for me to go, I would go to Alabama myself.
Yeah.
Right now it's nurses and disaster shelter care, which is the pastor that went.
Yeah.
Mental health is another area that's needed down there right now. So right now those are a lot of direct client services that are needed in that area right now. My role, as was stated, I'm more of a support role. So that may trigger up here after they get down there and start assessing what's going on and what impact has happened. And then if one of my areas happened to come open, then I would be deployed.
That's crazy.
Well, thank you, Gary.
I know. Gary, thanks for what you do as well.
We tried to get Gary on multiple times last year, but I felt like every time we were going to ask him to come on.
Every time you were too busy helping.
We talked to Don, and Don said he's going to the fires.
I have multiple hats. So,
I know.
You know, it's just,
you know. He's just too busy. We're driving around the country helping people and stuff.
Saving the world one state at a time.
We appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, I don't think a lot of people oftentimes think of, you know, you just automatically go to a fire, you know, EMS, like that kind of thing. But we forget about a lot of other things that are going on, whether, you know, with different levels of FEMA, with Red Cross volunteers, all of that. I mean, it's so important. And you guys are in Ohio, but yet your state's away helping people that need it. And you'd help people in Ohio too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not that you wouldn't be here doing the same thing in our state. We're just...
Which I did.
We did. Right. I was going to say you were in Cincinnati for huge river flooding, you know, so we forget that that there's just so many people that need each other. And thank you, because it is. It's people like you that have no problem volunteering and stepping up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wonderful thing. We've got another guest.
Yes.
Rounding out. Also in service, sir, Mr. John Parker. Which, Don, we've had you on, so if this is your first time listening to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast, go back to one of our first, I mean, it was
almost around this time last year, I think it was in March.
In March of last year.
It was your second one.
Yeah.
So one of our very first episodes, we got to talk to Don. And Don, I do want you to explain a little bit about your background, because you as well are very important to this community. You've had quite an extensive list of jobs.
Well, I've been involved in ham radio since 1992, and I'm one of the co-coordinators for Dayton Skywarn. Gary and Mike are both members. Gary's a co-coordinator now. I'm involved with Montgomery County Emergency Management. Mike and I are on the MCOM team, which is Emergency Communications. We're members of COAD, which is a... It's about a 2.5-year-old program now, which is communities active in disasters. And this was, we're involved in ground floor with EMA and FEMA getting this put together.
Mm-hmm.
This is an organization, volunteers, which is all we do.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have an incident where somebody needs like housing or there's a specific need, like when the EF0 tornado went down Glen Mine and Kettering a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of residents did not have access or funding to take care of all the huge trees. COAD was brought in, and we have organizations from churches, different. Basically, what we've done, we've taken Red Cross, St. Vincent de Paul, the food bank, Goodwill, mm-hmm. all these major organizations that are involved in helping the community are all grouped through COAD now. Wow. So if somebody needs something, they call the EMA office and identify what their needs are. They will contact that group that needs to go out and help.
Wow. That's once again, communication, mm-hmm. keeping everything tied together.
Right.
That's wonderful.
And then with Skywarn, we became an organized group in 1974 after the Xenia tornado. And the reason that was organized, because lack of communications. Now, I was stuck out in the middle of Arrowhead, which is a total flat disaster, mm-hmm. and wasn't able to talk to anybody but my partner.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that was an interesting night. And then I was back there again in September 2000 for the second tornado. And once again, it was ham radio communications that we utilized in order to, coordinate and call what we needed.
Yeah. Wow. And you explained a little bit more in that first episode that we had with you. A lot more about kind of your experience with Xenia and then getting that ball rolling really with like making sure that the communication lines were open between the different EMA directors and police and fire and all of that. When it comes to, I guess, where we're at right now, like all of the advancements that you guys have all worked on, for someone who maybe didn't know much about ham radio or maybe how involved it is just with even daily rescues mm-hmm. today, how can they get involved?
Well, this Saturday, March 9th, we will be sponsoring or hosting mm-hmm. Skywarn Weather Spotter Training with the National Weather Service, and that'll be from 9 a.m. to noon. Mm-hmm. And that'll be at the Miami Valley Hospital main campus, which is 1 Wyoming Street in Dayton. You have to specify which Miami Valley Hospital now. We will be in the Very Women's Center building in the Beiser Auditorium. You come in the main entrance into the building, go to the right, and go to the auditorium. There's no charge for it. We should have a couple local meteorologists, so if you want to meet the people you
I'll
get
be
to
there.
Watch on
like
TV, McCall's going to be there. I believe Carly Smith from Channel 2 will be there.
Nice.
The rest of them, they'll probably be at Bill's Donuts. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
It's a three-hour class, and once the program is completed, then they will tell you how you can receive a certification card. And we'll have brochure information from both the National Weather Service and Dayton Skywarn to give out. So it'll run about 3 hours since we have guest speakers and presentations coming mm-hmm. in. If somebody who is listening has already had the basic, and that's what this class is, on May 4th in Cincinnati, will be the advanced class, and that'll be from 9 to 1 o'clock, and that'll be at the Anderson Center on 5 Mile Road. Now, if you want to find out where these classes are, we have additional classes. We will be running Skywarn National Weather Service training classes in a variety of different counties. You can go to the DaytonSkywarn.org website and click on the Weather Spotter link. That'll take you right to the training calendar. You can go to Dayton Skywarn Facebook and Twitter, mm-hmm. and that'll also give you that information. Or you can work your way through National Weather Service website and hope to find it.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about, like, what are you going to learn in the basic class and the advanced class? So I'm coming. What am I going to get out of this?
Yeah.
In the basic class, you'll learn how to like read the clouds and the basically the weather. And you'll receive information on the different types of weather emergencies like flash flooding, tornadoes. They don't delve into hurricanes very much since we're not prone to them. Mm-hmm. Of course, in 2008, you could tell Ike, don't come back.
Right.
But and for many years, I've taught fire safety and weather response down at Sinclair. I always said, and in Ohio, we never have to worry about a hurricane. Well, in 2008, that got changed.
Ooh, whoops.
So basically, it's a matter of we teach people how to be weather spotters. If you see like a damaged building, trees down, and we want to know, is it a live or a dead tree, or you know, what size branch? Mm-hmm. And we don't teach you to be storm chasers.
Right.
Right. No.
We're very against that, but we teach you how to be a weather spotter, to go out and recognize and report in the information. You do not have to be a ham radio operator. Mm-hmm. When you get certified on your card, they'll have information. You can call the NWS in Wilmington directly and give them your weather report.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you are a ham radio operator, what we do is we cover 16 counties. When National Weather Service contacts myself, Gary, or Lou, we activate the comm center here at Channel 7 in the building. And each individual county activates their weather net. Mm-hmm. Then they take the weather reports from their weather spotters by ham radio. They then report that into us, and we relay that down to the National Weather Service. And we use ham radio predominantly. We have NWS chat, which, as you know, we all can get on there and chit-chat mm-hmm. about the weather. And occasionally telephone.
Yeah. But it's really important.
I think it is, because this day and age, unfortunately, there are going to be people that are trying to take advantage of situations and put out wrong information just so that they can have their 5 minutes of fame. So, yeah, for instance, you have a severe weather day and someone just sends in a photo of a tornado.
Right.
The problem is, because there's been so much, you know, fake content that's put out there, it can give us a moment of, is this real or is it not? Mm-hmm. If you become certified, you are taken seriously immediately.
Yeah.
So if you go through this training, you get that card, you call the National Weather Service, or you have a ham radio and you say, I see a tornado on the ground, instantly we're taking you for your word, and you could potentially be saving someone's life.
And I'd like to add to that, you know, the first part of that class that Don's going to give is the amateur radio part.
Yeah,
he failed to mention. But the first part of that class is going to be about amateur radio and how mm-hmm. what we do and how to get involved. Mm-hmm. And then I like to think the amateur radio as the same as the fire and EMS who use the radio for their TAC channels. When everybody's on the radio on the same page, everybody can hear what's going on in the mm-hmm. county. Everybody can track what's yeah. going on. Everybody can hear the same, so they can tell, okay, this is happening here. It may be happening in my spot. Okay, it's here now. This is happening right here. Now it's going on to this next place, and yeah. and gives more credence to the verification of this happened here,
exactly.
Now it's here.
Yeah.
And everybody's on the same channel. Everybody knows what's going on.
And that's so true, because back to social media and that kind of thing, people could be sending in photos and reports through email. We're getting reports through Facebook. We're getting reports
right.
through Twitter. It's kind of hard to take all of that when everything's going on, but you guys have this network
of trust.
And it's all coming into that one place.
Which is what happened,
everybody's feeding that information
which
all
is
to
what
one
happened
place.
In the Cedarville tornado. Cedarville
yes.
tornado, we had boots on the ground who was near there. And we tracked it all the way across Greene County into Clark County, up to Madison County, all through radio. Everybody knew where that mm-hmm. tornado was. Everybody knew when it struck the Dobbins family farm.
Right. Yep.
Everybody knew
yeah, and
where
I
that thing was and where it was going.
Yeah. And I remember how seamless, that in my mind, when I think about how much
right.
that was a well-oiled machine, that
it
Cedarville.
Really was.
I was in the building. You guys were in the building. Information is coming in. And
yeah.
you don't have to wait to necessarily verify, because
yeah.
everybody is certified and
yeah.
you know that it's accurate information that you're getting.
Yeah, so a great class. There are classes all across the Miami Valley, different counties. So again, you can go to the Skywarn website and you're able mm-hmm. to get the list of when these different classes will be in different counties. So you could check that out, because they do. They go through March, and then isn't this the main advanced classes in the beginning of May.
It's May 4th.
So you've got plenty of time to get around to different classes. Maybe you missed one in your county. You could drive to the next one and see a different class. If you have a kid that might be a little nervous, it's very educational. And it's honestly kind of a great way to educate them, expose them. And sometimes it's about learning about storms and about severe weather that can really make people less nervous.
So there was a funny story about that. 2 years ago, we had an 8-year-old come to our class. And we learned this year, his mother contacted us on our Facebook page and said that for his birthday this year, they had scheduled an activity in Indiana and found out that our training was happening that weekend of his birthday and canceled his activity in Indianapolis because he had to get recertified for Skywarn.
Oh, that's awesome.
So this will be his 10th birthday, and he's going to spend it with us.
That's awesome.
Wow. See? That's amazing.
I know.
The one thing I want to point out is whether you're a ham radio operator or, as we say, a civilian out there checking the weather, you are then an important part of the weather system. You are the eyes for the National Weather Service. And over the past, I think, 3 years, it has been, for us, it's been ham radio operators who have alerted us to funnel clouds and tornadoes on the ground. So you're a very intricate part. You know, like I said, you don't have to be a ham radio operator. And I always like to stress that because a lot of people get hung up on, well, I don't know how to work a radio.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
So that would be one of the parts that we stress also in the training on Saturday.
I think it's wonderful, guys.
This was great.
Great, yeah. We are not the only two that are blown away just from learning, from listening to your stories. I thank all three of you for all that you've done in your communities, not only here in the Miami Valley, but of course, Mike and Gary, if you guys have traveled and helped lots of others. And of course, our thoughts and prayers are with everyone down south because they have a lot to get through to rebuild. And that was definitely eye-opening and a terrifying severe weather event. And it's something we carry with us, and we're not even there. So,
yeah.
Actually, you know what? If you maybe want to talk, Gary, real quick about if maybe people want to get involved and help with the Red Cross, if it's just
online donations.
Online donations.
If you want to donate, you can go to redcross.org, call 1-800-RED-CROSS. If you want to volunteer, you can fill out an online application again at redcross.org, fill out the application, let everybody know what you're interested in, and someone will contact you and get you in touch with the right person. We're more than glad to have you.
We're happy to have you guys.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. If this is your first time listening to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast, you can go back, listen to all of our old episodes. McCall and I were just reflecting on crazy year that we've had now, and we've been able to continue this. If you have suggestions for anyone you'd like to maybe have on the show, or if you'd like to come on with us and talk, we like to talk about all things weather. So we would appreciate any suggestions as well. You could email both of us. And you can always listen to us on Google Play as well as Stitcher and Apple Podcasts and WHIO.com. Of course, we always will post our web stories with the direct link right to our different podcasts for you. So thanks so much for joining us this time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.